Welcome to the Back 9 Report. Welcome to the Back 9 Report, presented by eDraft.com.
Hello and welcome to this week's edition of eDraft.com's Back 9 Report. We come online every Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time and check in on the world of golf to bring you the latest news, insights, analysis, along with recaps, previews, interviews. Hey, we talk anything and everything golf. My name is Carlos Torres. Every week, I'm alongside my co-host, Fred Alvader. Fred, hi, how are you today?
Hey, I'm fantastic. We had a beautiful, beautiful day here in Toledo, Ohio today, just a Chamber of Commerce day. And, Carlos, we have another great week of golf to talk about. Billy Herschel earned over $13 million in just 3 weeks in the FedEx Cup playoffs. Another teenager won a major on the LPGA Tour. And the Web.com Tour Finals is down to its last event. Who's going to get those final 25 PGA Tour cards? Let's go.
Lots to talk about, and we have a very important guest, our VIG's birthday, the GM of the Greenbrier. So we have a tape interview that Fred did. But, Fred, let's start right away with the Bar 5 news. You're going to take, as usual, the tee shot, and there's something that you're going to talk to us about Obama and Donald Trump. What's going on there?
You know, Carlos, we talked last week about Obama's timing about playing golf after an important news conference, and he kind of is in the news again this week. In a short piece in Global Golf Post on Monday, Mike Caldy reported that President Obama sought to play golf at some private clubs around the New York area over Labor Day weekend, but was turned away. Trump National, Winged Foot, and Willow Ridge all said thanks, but no thanks to the advance team when they attempted to find a place for the president to play over the holiday weekend. It seems the clubs did not want to deny their high-paying members playing privileges so the leader of the free world could get in a few whacks. We talked last week about Obama's poor timing of going to play golf immediately after addressing the media about the cruel murder of James Foley by the ISIL gang. In an interview on NBC's Meet the Press, Obama admitted he should have anticipated the optics of playing golf immediately after denouncing the beheading. I'm sure the golf industry appreciates President Obama's efforts to support golf and help showcase the game as a great way to relax and ease the stresses of a high-pressure job, but he might want to consider what the average American taxpayer thinks about his hobby. Trump National is one of the private clubs that denied the president access, and Dirt Donald went on Twitter to announce, if Obama resigns from office now, thereby doing a great service to the country, I will give him free lifetime golf at any one of my clubs. The tweet was well received in the Twitter universe and received 13,500 retweets. Being the president is a 24/7 high-stress pressure situation, but he is the one that won a job not once, but twice. He may want to consider what the public perception is of his extracurricular activities. Marie Antoinette, never one to adhere to a strict public relations policy, said, let him eat cake. And we all know what happened to her. Carlos, I think you're going to talk a little bit about Bubba and the Ryder Cup over in Glen Eagles. He was pretty high strung there in Chicago at Medina, whipping up the crowd. Is he going to do that kind of stuff? Will that kind of fly over there in the state, old stuffy Scotland?
I have bad news for you because he has vowed to tone down the theatrics that followed him at the last Ryder Cup. You know, we all remember that infamous contest at Medina Country Club in Chicago when he encouraged a raucous atmosphere around his playing group where he whipped the galleries into a thirsty frenzy there. Now, at European Ian Poulter, he matched that approach during that epic weekend, but with the eagerly anticipated contest heading to British soil, This time around, the elected lefty has confirmed he will try and be more reserved at Glen Eagles. Okay. He said, and this is, I'm quoting, "I will not be doing that. That was just because we were on our home soil. That was my little way of trying to grow the game of golf. I loved it when Poulter did it. He and I talked about how nervous it becomes after you do that. It was just a one-time thing. I think it was fun. No, I would never do that again, especially on foreign soil where they might be against that." Despite suggesting that it's not on the cards in a fortnight's time, he admitted that he can't control, how excited he gets during the Ryder Cup weeks, and it might happen by accident, when he added, "I wasn't thinking about doing that, but you never know. When I get over there, I might get excited and do it anyway." He's ever changing. He said all this prior to playing the Tour Championship this past weekend and said he would relish victory over Europe more than winning the $10 million FedEx Cup, and we're going to be talking something about those things a little bit later on the practice range, because as he said, he has won tournaments before, but never a Ryder Cup. In another surprise, and to his credit, he refused to join the predictable throng of golfers who have complained about the intensity of scheduling around this FedEx Cup series. As you remember, Phil Mickelson even took the ridiculous decision to withdraw halfway through the last BMW Championship, citing little more than a lack of form. In summary, Bubba says he will tone down his boisterous ways during the Ryder Cup. You know, Fred, it would be good to remind everyone that unlike the state atmosphere of golf majors, the Ryder Cup tends to have the feel of a football game. Players encourage frenzy. This time, expect the subtle Bubba. Yeah, right. I don't even believe that, Fred. So anyway, I believe now you have something about Jason Duffner and Greg Norman.
Yeah, you know, it seems like every week we have to add a medical report to our Par 5 news segment. Well, this week is no different. The last time we saw Jason Duffner, he said he would not enter a golf tournament again until he could freely swing a golf club without his neck bothering him. Well, he must be mending nicely because he announced this week that he intends to play in the Perth International Tournament in Australia, October 23rd through the 26th. Duffner finished runner-up at this event in 2012 and would be joined in the field by Frenchman Victor Dubuisson and Aussies Jeff Ogilvie, Stephen Bowditch, and Brett Rumsford. You know, also, I'm sure you remember a guy by the name of Tiger Woods. Well, he talked with the media yesterday at Isleworth announcing Hero Motorcorp as the new sponsor for his World Challenge event in December. Tiger withdrew from the WGC Bridgestone after tweaking his ailing back and missed the PGA Championship, the FedEx Cup playoffs, and will miss the Ryder Cup. He pretty much missed the whole 2014 golf season. Tiger says he is progressing according to schedule. He has not swung a club, but has been doing a lot of physical fitness and is regaining his strength and endurance. He expects to start hitting shots in October, which gives him a full 2 months to prepare for the Hero World Challenge at the beginning of December. And finally, Greg Norman apparently escaped serious injury when he suffered a nasty incident involving a chainsaw while trimming brush at his Florida property. The saw became entangled in a limb and pulled his left hand into the spinning chain. It sliced his left hand just below where his watch would have been. No nerve damage was done, only muscular, and the hopes are for a full recovery for the white shark. Hopefully, the injury will not affect his preparations to begin his new gig as the lead analyst for Fox Sports as they begin their coverage of all USGA tournaments in 2015. As is the modern custom, Norman was cracking jokes and posting pictures of his pink foam cast on Instagram. He was very lucky, Carlos. Golfers should not fool themselves and think they can do real manual labor. Chainsaws do not normally give mulligans. And Carlos, we have been following the growth of golf in China and the Chinese coming over here and snapping up bargain properties. Evidently, the Chinese have expanded to England.
Oh, they do, and you know why? It's because the London billionaire Richard Kering, he sold the Wentworth Club in Virginia Water to the China-based Winewood Group for a mere chump change of £135 million. The sale of the iconic golf and sporting complex was described by the 65-year-old as to golf what Wimbledon is to tennis will not have been an easy decision to make. The home of the European Tour's annual flagship BMW PGA tournament, Wentworth, currently celebrating its 90th anniversary, boasts three championship courses plus a nine-hole par-3 layout and a top-of-the-range tennis and fitness center. Members actually pay annually a fee of £8,000 on top of a £15,000 joining fee. At the time of buying the course for £130 million in 2004, Kering said, it's priceless, like MasterCard. There is only one Wentworth in the world. He plopped around £6 million into a dramatic remodeling of the world-renowned West Course with Open champion Ernie Els, who has a home on the course, leading the project. With its famous 18th century neo-Gothic clubhouse and strict etiquette rules, no tracksuits, leggings, or baseball caps the wrong way around can be worn on its fairways, amateur golfers love to play in its manicure fairways. But around on its sought-after West Course will set you back just 360 pounds. Kering, a keen golfer himself and who will remain as a non-executive director, said he has been inundated with offers to buy the club, but he was holding out for the right one. And the new Beijing-based owners have promised to preserve Wentworth's unique culture, as said by Dr. Chen Chai Ruverangun, who founded the group behind China's first private golf club. He said his company would draw on the club's exceptional expertise to inform its other golf operations across Asia. So if they're going to do that, oh, they're going to have a great experience doing it. Kering is expected to use the proceeds of the sale as a massive war chest for West End restaurants and nightclubs spending spree. He already owns a crown jewels collection of A-list venues, including Scott's, the Ivy, and Annabelle's. So, Fred, he's swapping Wentworth for leaving La Vida Loca. That's what I see it.
I can't argue with him for that. Hey, Carlos, in our last news item this evening, Mark King has been the CEO of TaylorMade Adidas, churning out new models of golf equipment every 4 months and has been running around spouting the demise of the golf industry to anybody that will listen. His scorched earth golf equipment policy has caused extreme buyer's remorse among golf fans, creates havoc with retail inventories, and has instilled indecision in the golf world of what and when to buy new clubs. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that evidently his bosses like his rhetoric and attention-grabbing theater and have promoted him to CEO of Adidas in all of North America. Adidas has experienced a steep drop in sales and has fallen behind not only Nike, but also relatively newcomer Under Armour for the third spot in the highly competitive sports apparel industry. This is a pretty big deal for Mr. King and Adidas. He now becomes the head of a company servicing the entire North American continent that includes not only the Adidas brand, but includes Reebok and CCM, which is big in the hockey business in Canada. Adidas is seen more as an international brand, and King will need to streamline his designs to fit a younger, more active market. At least we won't have to watch him turning up on television every 5 minutes bashing the golf business anymore. Good riddance there, I say. So good luck for Adidas. I like their products. I've worn Adidas and used TaylorMade for years, but I have never been a fan of Mark King, I'm afraid.
Oh, I thought you were going to say you were, and that's a great move. Yeah, celebrating all that.
Sergio, me and Sergio. Sergio rocks the Adidas TaylorMade. You know, me and Sergio are pretty close.
That wraps up our 5 minutes. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll start our recaps from this weekend's action, and there is a lot of action that we have to talk about. So, as always, we'll be right back.
for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time to start our recaps from this weekend's action. There was plenty of action, 2 big tournaments, actually maybe 3, but 2 really big ones, the Tour Championship and a major on the LPGA. But we're going to start with the PGA Tour because the Tour Championship was the crowning moment for the FedEx Cup. And Billy Horschel, he birdies the par 5 15s to take the lead for good, made a clutch 31-foot par-saving putt on the 16th hole, and from there he cruised home to win the Tour Championship on Sunday. He closed with a 2-under-68 to win by 3 strokes at East Lake, finishing at 11-under par. He also won the FedEx Cup, and in the process became the lowest-ranked player entering the playoffs to win the FedEx Cup. He started the playoffs ranked 69th on the points list. After he missed the cut at the Barclays, he finished 2nd at the Deutsche Bank. He needed a birdie at the last hole at the TPC Boston to force a playoff or an eagle to win, but he dumped his approach in a hazard and ended 2 back. He might have been winning 3 in a row. So he followed with a two-stroke win at the last week's BMW Championship. In the last 3 events, he has posted 12 consecutive rounds in the 60s, the first one to do it. Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods had 11. Former FedEx Cup and Tour Championship winner Gene Farrick, he closed with a 1-under par, 69, to grab a share of 2nd place at 9-under. At 8-under, he was joined there by world number 1 Rory McIlroy, the Open champion and PGA champion, who stumbled to a 1-over 71 in the final round. He was on the final group with Billy Horschel, tied going into the final round. Billy Horschel looked at him in the eye. He took them down, so he beat the best here. Chris Kirk, who led the FedEx Cup points list entering this week, he caught a 2-under-68. He was joined in 4th place by Justin Rose and Jason Day, who both shot 1-under-69 in the final round. Kirk ended 2nd in the FedEx Cup points behind Horschel. Ryan Palmer ended alone in 7th at 6-under. Ricky Fowler took 8 at 5-under. So with the win, Horschel won the $10 million and the $1.44 million for the victory set.
Yeah, he, as you mentioned, he entered the FedEx Cup playoffs ranked at number 68. But he got hot just at the right time of the year. After missing the cut at the Barclays, he fell clear down to number 82 and was in danger of being eliminated before he even made it to the BMW Championship. He talked with his wife, who will deliver the couple's first child, maybe pretty soon. It was noted today that she started labor, I guess, and began to think ahead to the fall series and the start of the 2014-2015 season. That simple act seemed to free up his mind and allowed him to play a relaxed style of golf over these last 3 events that evidently has a very positive effect on one's putting. After the Barclays, Horschel strung together 12 consecutive rounds in the 60s and made putts from everywhere. As you mentioned, a poorly struck second shot on the 72nd hole at the Deutsche Bank resulted in a double bogey 6 and prevented him from winning in Boston, but he did settle for runner-up. He appeared cool, calm, and collected in posting 68, 66, 63, 69 to win the BMW Championship in Denver at historic Cherry Hills, and he rolled into the Tour Championship at East Lake in Atlanta with a ton of confidence and the hottest putter in the world. Rory McIlroy contended but ran out of gas and finished tied with 44-year-old Jim Furyk for runner-up. Since the Open Championship at the end of the July, McIlroy has 3 wins and 6 top 10 finishes in 7 starts. And this is against the best competition that golf can produce, Carlos. That's pretty high production numbers there from young Mr. McIlroy. At 27 years old, Horschel becomes the youngest winner of the FedEx Cup. His streak of 12 consecutive rounds in the 60s in the playoffs is the longest recorded Not even Tiger, Phil, or Rory can match that amazing statistic. Another interesting fact from the 2014 Tour Championship is that half of the 29 players in the field were under the age of 30. It was the youngest field ever for a Tour Championship with an average age of 31. Horschel pocketed $597,000 for his runner-up at the Deutsche Bank. He added $1.44 million for each of his wins at the BMW and the Tour Championships. That total, plus the $10 million from the FedEx Cup prize money, brings his earnings to just under $13.4 million for the last 3 weeks. That new baby will not have to worry about daddy bringing home sufficient income for diapers and formula.
And, you know, the funny thing is that he had agreed with his wife, both of them agreed that if she was going to labor, he would stay there and complete the FedEx Cup. So I guess the word was, you better win those $10 million if I go into labor. Otherwise,
or don't come home.
Yeah, don't come home at all. Get it long.
Don't come home without that $10 million.
I don't know how you get them, but you get those $10 million if I go into labor here and there. So.
If I'm standing here and having this baby, you better bring home the cash.
Yeah. he's looking at you wrong. He said, man, today's not your day. you have nothing to worry about. You'll have future to do that.
You know, it just looked like Rory ran out of gas on Sunday, man. His mind was not there. He was ready. He looked like he was ready to go on vacation, man. It just wasn't happening for him. He just didn't have the energy to get it done. Did you notice that?
Yeah, and I think that Billy noticed that Rory wasn't on his game early on and maybe gave him the confidence. You know, this is the guy I'm competing with. And even though when Jim Furyk made the run and tied him, and then, you know, that I think that the clutch par-saving putt there on the 16, I thought for sure, I was thinking he's going to two-putt here. He's going to make bogey. But he made it there from 31 feet out, and it was sensational. I mean, that's where he won the FedEx Cup and the tournament. And definitely Jim, unfortunately, another runner-up in a big tournament. He had another chance to be there close, maybe go for a playoff. But, no, it wasn't meant to be. Billy, it was mentioned that he made an adjustment to his grip on the putting stroke before the Deutsch. And, wow, whatever it was, I want to ask him what it was. I want to put like that. Wow, 12 rounds in the 60s. Like you mentioned, not even Tiger, Rory, or Phil. Rory and Tiger had the record for 11. Now it belongs to Billy with 12. So definitely, I would say that if the captain's pick would have been today, Tom Watson would have been saying Billy Horschel. Don't you think?
Oh, you think he'd much rather have him than just about anybody on the team? Actually, I would trade just about anybody. Everybody would be expendable for Billy for me. I'd take him in a heartbeat, man.
Oh, right now, yes. And he joined Rory McIlroy and Tiger Woods as only three players since 2009 to win back-to-back events and became the fifth player to win two straight playoff events. This was the final official event of the 2013-14 wraparound season. The Ryder Cup's in 2 weeks. So, hey, everything is setting up for that. So now they can go on a break and start the FedEx Cup. I mean, the Ryder Cup pretty soon. So any final thoughts?
Ryder Cup? Is the Ryder Cup coming? We're going to talk Ryder Cup?
Yes, the Ryder Cup is coming. It's coming. Next week, next weekend, it's right there.
I understand we're going to have our European guru in to talk about the Ryder Cup next week. We're gonna do a little European bashing, I think.
Yes, I know that you two are going to keep going there, what you started a couple of weeks ago. Unfortunately, I won't be here to sound the bell so you can go off. I'll be on a plane, but I'm sure that I will listen to it as soon as I get down and start listening to it. I know that you two are going to go at it. And, of course, even though I think that he got you last time, you were too
I'm exploring options, ways to Maybe we can get somebody, find somebody that's got an injury on the team, and they can drop off, and maybe there's a rule we can pick up Horschel and add him to the team.
Let's do that. I'll help you do it. We'll find somebody.
I got a secret weapon coming for Kieran next week. I got the keys to the U.S. win. I know what they are. I know how it has to happen. So I'm going to spring that on next week.
Just make sure that whatever you predict, I don't have to fix it the other week.
Okay. I don't know if they're going to do it. I just know how they have to do it. I'm not sure they're going to do it.
Okay. You just have the key. It's like, the Matrix, right? I'm just to show you the door. You are the one that has to go through it.
Exactly.
Hey, let's move on now to the LPGA, where they had their last major, the Evian Championship, and in a hole, training Carrie Webb by one shot. Yu Kim, she made a birdie to win the Evian Championship, and then Webb tripped to a bogey on the par 4 18th, so gave her there the win to Hyeju Kim. Who would have thought that? Kim, who held the first and third round leads, finished her week off at 3-under Sunday there at Evian Resort Golf Club. She ended with an 11-under par, 273. The win is Kim's first on the LPGA Tour, meaning it's also her first major championship. Having played in just 3 events this year, Kim has finished in the top 10 all 3 times with this victory. Webb, who was seeking her 7th major title and her first Evian Championship win, also carded a 3-under on 68 on Sunday, and she finished one shot back at 10-under. Webb has won every major championship on tour except for this one. Of course, this one became a major last year, but still, she had the shot. She couldn't take it. Hana Yang with a 66 and Mi Yung Ho with a 68 tied for third at 9-under, while NYC, Nayan Choi, she continues to play good again. She finished alone in fifth at 8-under. Two-time major champion and last year's winner, Suzanne Pedersen, ended alone in sixth at 7-under. Second-round leader Brittany Lincecone, but she rebounded for a 77 on Saturday with a 71 on Sunday and finished tied for 8th at 4-under with Lydia Ko. And by the way, hey, Michelle Wee, she was named the inaugural winner of the Rolex Annika Major Award on Sunday. She hung on to win after even withdrawing from the Evian Championship during the first round, as you all remember, re-injuring her right hand. She had several pursuers this past week, but none of the eligible players made a final round charge to catch her in the point standings. She finished with 84 points with her victory. The U.S. Women's Open with 60 points. Her runner-up at the Kraft Nabisco was worth 24. Indy Park's tie for 10th this week earned her 2 points, falling 9 points shy of winning the award. Lexi Thompson finished alongside Park to earn 2 points herself, finished third in the point standings with 70. The other one eligible would have been Mo Martin. She didn't play her win at the Women's British Open and her 60 points. And, of course, the winner this year, the Evian Championship, Hyeju Kim, 60. But that was all that she could do. She couldn't do any more points. So how about the win by Hyeju Kim, the 19-year-old from South Korea, up-and-coming teenager, great player, and the win by Michelle Wee on the inaugural Rolex Annika Major Award.
Yeah, Carlos, we've got a real youth theme going here on the show tonight. And we didn't mention it, but, the way the PGA Tour is set up with so many big tournaments from the end of July through September really puts a premium on endurance and strength. And the young guys have the edge in that. So, it's really difficult for guys over 40 to hang in there with those young guys. And here we are on the LPGA, and, again, youth is coming to the fore. We've been talking about the young players in the LPGA all summer, and yet another teenage sensation, South Korea's Hyeju Kim, fired a final round 300 par 68 to win her first major championship at the Evian over the weekend. She turned professional in October 2012 at the age of 17. after a very successful amateur career and immediately signed a large sponsorship agreement with Lotte. Kim immediately yielded a positive return by winning the Hyundai China Ladies Open on the Korean Ladies Professional Golf Tour in her second start as a professional. She missed being named KLPGA's Player of the Year in her first season as a professional, but did earn Rookie of the Year honors. Kim has only played in 9 LPGA Tour events, but has never finished outside the top 25. The Evian Championship was only her third start on the LPGA Tour this year. She finished T7 at the Swinging Skirts LPGA Classic and T4 at the Lotte Championship earlier this year. Koreans garnered 4 of the top 5 spots in the final major championship, and, you know, over the last couple of years, all we've been talking about is Korean players, and this year it's all been all Americans winning all the way through. Very, very few international players have been winning. But the last major and this one, the Koreans finally reemerged. Kerry Webb, the only non-Korean in the top 5, finished runner-up. She began the day one shot behind Kim, and her final round 68 left her one shot shy of the win. Mi Young-ho and Ha Na Young finished 2 shots back of Kim at 9-under par, good enough for joint third. Na Young Choi began the final round tied for 6th and 4 shots behind the 54-hole leader. She birdied her first 4 holes, got within 2 shots of the lead, but that's as close as she would get. Her final round 4-under par 67 left her alone in 5th. Defending champion Suzanne Pettersson was near the 36-hole lead with rounds of 67-69, but a third round 74 moved her down the leaderboard, and she finished solo 6th. Paula Creamer used a 5-under par 66 on Sunday to move up 8 spots to finish 7th. Lydia Ko was runner-up here last year, has been hampered by a hand injury that will require surgery this fall. She played her normal steady golf and finished T8 with Brittany Lincecum. Another teenager, 19-year-old Lexi Thompson, posted all 4 rounds in the 70s and finished T10. World number one Stacey Lewis never seemed comfortable on the Evian Resort Golf Club. She was among leaders after 36 holes, but a pair of 73s on the weekend dropped her to a T16 finish. U.S. Women's Open champ Michelle Wee tried to return to competitive action, but injured hand just wouldn't let her play. She had to withdraw on Thursday. But as you mentioned, she did pick up the Anika Award, and we congratulate her for that. 19-year-old Kim moves to number 10 in the Rolex ranking and adds another name to an already crowded list of teenage talent in the women's game. Minji Lee, Lydia Ko, Lexi Thompson, Ariya Jutanagarn, Charlie Hall, they're all still teenagers, Carlos, and they're all playing at a very high level.
The future looks bright for the LPGA. They have not only the youngsters, but the veterans are playing well. You know, Kerry Webb was there with them. So that's part of the success of the LPGA, that even though the youngsters are up and coming, and you can see them, just like you have mentioned, we have been following them ever since we started this show. We always have been talking about the youngsters and the young stars that are up and coming. So here you came definitely claiming her first LPGA Tour title. And like you mentioned, she has never been besides top 25 finishes in her career in the LPGA. So you have Lydia Ko, Minji Lee up and coming. She played well. She just couldn't crack the top 10. But, hey, that's another one. Lydia Ko, like you mentioned, has been battling an injury, and hopefully she gets back to full strength next year. So Lexi Thompson and all the teenagers, Charlie Hall, they're all going to be there with Stacey Lewis, Michelle Wee, Nainde Park, Soyun Ryu, all the veterans are going to be there. So this is a great, great season, great tour at the LPGA. And like you mentioned, Hyeo Kim now moves into the top 10, and that bumped Anna Nordqvist and Kristy Kerr down to 11 and 12. Nayin Choi inched up to 13th, and Paula Creamer climbed 2 notches to 14th. So Stacey Lewis in Bay Park, Lydia Ko, and Suzanne Pettersson remain the top 4 players in the rankings. Kerry Webb bogeyed that final hole and is now in the 5th. So, hey, great tournaments, great competition, the LPGA Tour for it.
And it's just great watching these young players come. You know, I'm going to talk about it more later tonight. We're going to talk about it real quick here in the when we talk about the Web.com Tour Championship. But the young players, they just, man, they have no fear. They come up and they just take charge. They're so well trained as juniors, and there's so much good competition for them, and they learn so much, and they just jump in and do it, and they have the strength and the ability to get it done. It's pretty amazing, really.
The competition that they face, even though it's no pros, when they're in the amateurs, all those that you see coming up, they're battle-tested. If you see Min Jae Lee was just coming from winning the team amateur world championship, coming down, taking her team from down from 7 strokes down to win. So that's the kind of competitors that we're seeing with the youngsters. But like you said, we'll talk a little bit later on about them. So let's now, unless you have something else that you would like to talk about the Evian Championship, we'll move to the web.com tour.
No, let's move on. I'm ready.
Okay, so the web.com tour, the tour finals is getting down to the last one. This was the third, and Justin Thomas, finally, he birdies the first play of hole on Sunday to defeat Richard Sterney and win the Nationwide Children's Hospital Championship. Thomas and Sterney both close with 1-under 70 to end at 6-under par 278. The pair then returned to the 18th for the extra session. Both players found the fairway off the tee and the green with their approach shots. After Sterney missed his birdie chance from outside 20 feet, Thomas kicked in his three-footer for birdie in his first Web.com Tour title. Sterney was also looking for his first tour win and custom himself that victory with a 3 straight bogeys from the 15th. Sean O'Hare cost himself a spot in the playoff with a bogey and the 18th on the Scarlet course there at the Ohio State University Golf Club.
I'm going to say it like the Ohio State University.
Like the football players say it, huh? The Ohio State University Golf Club. O'Hare shot 4-under to end alongside Wee Kim in third place at 5-under. J.K. Henry also close with a 67 to take fifth place at 4-under. Tony Finau and Blaine Barber were 1 stroke back at 3-under. Derek Fathauer, who shared the lead with Thomas and Sterney entering that final round, stumbled to a 3-over-74. He fell into a tie for 8 at 2-under, where he was joined by Patrick Rogers, Vaughn Taylor, and Adam Hadwin, where the final players in red figures at 1-under. So Justin Thomas, great season, but he was maybe, we always talk about the best player ever to win a major. Well, he was the best player not to win a tournament on the web.com tour this year, but it finally came for him here at the Nationwide Children's Hospital Championship.
Yeah, Carlos, I got a question of the week for you. What do Bud Cauley, Adam Hadwin, and Justin Thomas have in common besides being the winners of the first 3 Web.com Tour Finals events?
I was just going to answer that. They all qualified for they earned their cards for the PGA Tour next year.
They did, but that's not what I'm looking for. They are all in their 20s. Youth, Carlos,
youth.
We're talking youth here.
Youth
movement. That's exactly right. Yes, we see some familiar names on the web.com tours leaderboards every week, but the majority of the winners are coming directly from college or under the age of 25. This is a trend in all of golf, not just the web.com. We've documented it on the PGA Tour. We've documented it on the LPGA. The average age of the field for the PGA Tour Championship last week at East Lake was 31. We mentioned that earlier in the 29-man field. Billy Horschel was the youngest winner ever of the FedEx Cup at age 27. Chris Kirk, Rory McIlroy, Ricky Fowler, Jason Day, and Russell Henning all contended last week. All are way young. 23-year-old Carlos Ortiz, fresh out of the University of North Texas, won 3 times on the web.com tour this year. 23, Carlos. He's only 23. 26-year-old Adam Hadwin had 2 wins in 2014. John Curran, 27. Andrew Putnam, 29. Blaine Barber, 24. Max Homa, 23. Kieran's favorite, Sebastian Capilan, 24. Zach Sucher, Tony Finau, Roger Sloan. All these guys in their 20s. The winner last week at the Nationwide Children's Hospital was 21-year-old Justin Thomas. Just 21. Justin, his first year on web.com, had 7 top 10 finishes and is now fourth in the Web.com Tour priority rankings. Plus, he had one top 10 and made three cuts on the PGA Tour in 2014. He did survive the playoff with Richard Cerny, who had such a great year on the European Tour last year. And these young players are receiving excellent training in college and are coming through the Web.com and onto the PGA Tour ready to compete. They are secure and confident with their game, and their learning curve is very rapid. Also, the structure now with the length of the schedule and the difficulty of the golf courses make endurance and strength a priority for good scoring. You could see even Rory McIlroy wearing down at the Tour Championship last week. One of the things that Tiger Woods commented on in his media session on Monday was his lack of endurance and strength when he tried to return at Firestone in August. Golf has become a young man's game, Carlos. That will make it even more difficult for Tiger to get his five majors. And we just see it across every tour. The young guys, they are dominating.
They are, and more to that, Justin Thomas was the sixth rookie this year to win on this tour. So six rookies, more to that, adding to the young movement, like you mentioned. So he earned $180,000 for this win, also earned, like we mentioned, an exemption into next year's Memorial Tournament. So Cerny also guaranteed himself a spot there at the PGA Tour next season despite the loss, and Sean O'Hare also regained a store card for next season. So definitely youth movement is our theme this week, and it's been, I guess, ever since we started the show. Hey, the Web.com Tour Championship is next week, this next weekend. After that event, the top 50 players on the final series money list will earn their PGA Tour cards for next season. So, Fred, unless you have something else, we'll move on to the European Tour now.
I am ready.
Ready, Fred. Let's roll. And let's talk a little bit about the European Tour. And it was the KLM Open. Paul Casey began the day four shots back of Romain Wattel, made an early move and ended up firing four under in the final round on Sunday, touring a one-shot victory at the KLM Open. Casey, who made the cut by just three shots and used a third-round 62 to move into contention, finished at 14 under for his 13th win on the European Tour and first since last year's Irish Open. Three-time winner Simon Dyson made a late push, but it wasn't enough. His 65 gave him sole possession of second place at 13-under. Andy Sullivan, you'll hear something about him. He shot a 3-under there at Kenema Golf and Country Club to finish third at 12-under, and with his hole-in-one on the 163-yard par 3 15 hole, he won a trip to space. It'll be in space. He won it. So he's going to be the spaceman from now on, Andy Sullivan. Eddie Pepperell ended up 11-under by himself, and third-round leader Roman Wattel tripped to a 7-4 on Sunday, finished four shots back at 10-under with second-round leader Pablo Larrazábal and defending champion Juice Lorton and Johan Carlsson. So like I mentioned, Sullivan's hole-in-one on 15 won him a trip to space. And with the win, Casey won 300,000 euros. So that was the KLM Open. And there was action also on the European Senior Tour, where it was played the Senior Open de Portugal at the Vidago Palace in Porto, Portugal. Team Thelen shot the final round, even par 72 on Sunday, and he was able to hang on and win the Senior Open de Portugal by one shot. Listen, he wasn't Colin Montgomery. He wasn't playing. That's why he didn't win. Thelen finished at the week at 12-under for his fourth victory on the European Senior Tour. This is his first win on tour since he won three events back in 2012. So Thelen had to hold off a surging Miguel Angel Martin, who caught it a 5-under, to finish one shot back at 11-under. Carl Mason and Des Smith shot matching 71s to finish tied at for third at 10-under. Angel Franco, Jose Rivero, Steen Tinnen, Chris Williams, and Greg Turner all tied for fifth at 9-under par. And that wraps up our recaps from this past weekend's action. We're going to take a short break right now, and when we come back, we have our VIG, our interview of the week, and that's with Bert Bain. So don't go away. We'll be right back. Don't go away, anybody.
Thank you for listening to the Back Nine Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back. And now it's time for our VIG Very Important Guest of the Week. It's Bert Bain. Is the GM of the Greenbrier. Fred was there and made an interview for him. So, Fred, set up this interview for us.
Yeah, I have to first of all apologize to Mr. Bain. When I started the interview, I referred to him as Bert Blaine. So I have to please overlook that when we start that. I didn't edit it out. I thought I would just apologize to him before we get started with it. But yeah, I had the chance to visit the Greenbrier last month, and what a place. I was. I had high expectations when I went there, and they exceeded every expectation I had by a bunch. It is a wonderful place. I absolutely cannot wait to get back there. And Mr. Bain was accommodating enough to let me do an interview and let him talk a little bit about the facilities there and the new owner, Mr. James Justice.
Okay, so let's play the interview with Bert Bain.
We are happy to have the Greenbriers Golf Club General Manager, Bert Blaine, with us this evening. Bert oversees the operation of all the golf facilities at the Greenbrier, of which they are beautiful, let me tell you. And Bert, that has to keep you a pretty busy guy.
Yes, it does. Fred, certainly in season, this is a very busy place, a lot of happy golfers.
How long have you been associated with the Greenbrier, and how did you happen to come there?
This is my fourth year. And I came here through a connection with the PGA Tour's TPC network when Mr. Justice decided after the success of the first year's Greenbrier Classic that he wanted to get the TPC organization involved in managing the golf operations. That's what brought me here.
Well, you know, you mentioned James Justice, and it seems like he has injected a new energy and excitement into the resort.
Well, there's no question about that. Who knows what would have happened to the Greenbrier without Mr. Justice, but he did step up, and he purchased the resort with the intent of making it a world-class resort destination. He's invested countless dollars and time and effort and made many, many contributions to change the perspective of the guests in terms of what the Greenbrier is, what it has to offer, how we fit into their choices for recreational vacations.
Well, man does not live by golf alone, and the Greenbrier certainly has a wide variety of different activities to choose from, just including just eating. The dining establishments there are just wonderful, and all the choices that are they're there. There's a casino that has been added since Mr. Justice took over, in addition to the golf. So. And I also understand that the Greenbrier is kind of getting more involved in the tennis sport also.
We are. The casino is probably, in addition to the PGA Tour, the biggest change that came under Mr. Jones, Justice's ownership, and that's opened up a new market for us of people that do like to partake in some games of chance. But, yes, we just announced, Mr. Justice just announced about a week ago, the construction of a new stadium court, and this will be a absolutely gorgeous stadium court designed by the world's number one tennis facility designers, the people that did the U.S. Open courts in New York. It's going to be right near the old white courts. It'll have a gorgeous view. It'll be a stadium center court that'll seat about 3,500 people and could also be used for concerts and other outdoor activities. But, yes, this is the second year of our Tennis Champions event, which occurs in the fall. In fact, it's next weekend. We have Pete Sampras. Pete is our professional emeritus, our tennis professional emeritus, which would be the counterpart to Tom Watson. He'll be here along with Andy Roddick, John McEnroe, and Ryan Harrison, and they're going to play an exhibition of singles and doubles matches, and that's pretty exciting.
Well, Bert, let's talk a little bit about what you are really familiar with, the golf courses. Tell us about the golf courses that are there and why guys should want to come there and play.
Well, I think a number of reasons. One, we do have three great golf courses, and they're all different. The oldest golf course is the Old White TPC, which is, just turned 100 years old this year. It's a C.B. McDonald design. C.B. McDonald is known as the father of American golf course architecture. There are many C.B. McDonald golf courses which survive today, but very few that are not private clubs with, you know, high initiation fees and not accessible to people. So that's one of the reasons, is to come and see the course that's host to the Greenbrier Classic, the course you see on television, see how you play the holes that the pros play. But we also have a gem of a golf course called the Greenbrier Course, which hosted the 1979 Ryder Cup and the 1994 Solheim Cup. And there are very few golf courses that can say that. The Greenbrier was originally done by Seth Rayner in 1924 and was updated by Jack Nicklaus in 1975. And then the last golf course is the Meadows, which may be the prettiest of the three. It's a very scenic golf course that goes along the valley floor. Lots of beautiful views, water, landscaping. And it's not an easy golf course. It's just a companion course to the two championship courses. So lots of golf choices. Another reason we mentioned is the casino. And probably the third reason is the gorgeous weather. From May through October, the Greenbrier Valley experiences some of the most consistently good weather of any place in the country. So if you are planning a golf trip, you know, this is a great place to bring a group of guys or couples.
And, Bert, I think you failed to mention one of the things that really impressed me there was the overall service. Everyone is so friendly and so accommodating, from the people that meet you at the front door to the wait, the service staff, everyone at the golf course. Your service there is just unparalleled.
Well, thank you. We do have a great group of staff and employees. In season, we have about 1,900 employees. They do have a passion for service, and you know our goal is to for every guest that comes here every day to experience world-class service and to have an experience that's timeless and make a memory with their family or with their friends.
You have had the opportunity to work with some of the most famous names in the world of golf. Of course, Sam Snead was the professional emeritus there for many years. Tom Watson now holds that position. Nick Faldo is on the staff, teaching staff, and has a residence at the Greenbrier. Do you have being around the Greenbrier, Sam Snead was such a part of that facility for so many years. Is there a favorite Sam Snead story that you might share with us?
Well, you're right. Mr. Snead is one of the legends of golf, the great triumvirate of American golfers who were all born in 1912, Sam Snead, Byron Nelson, and Mr. Hogan. He was here for so many years and touched the lives of so many people and had such a great impact and is so indelibly linked with the Greenbrier. This is a story that was related to me that one day Mr. Snead was out practicing here at the Greenbrier and a storm came over the mountain, and the young man in the golf shop went out to warn him and, you know, said, "Mr. Snead, you might want to come in the club. There's lightning in the area." Snead had just ignored him and continued to hit balls. And the storm came closer. There was thunder and a closer lightning strike, and the young man was concerned. He went back out and he said, Mr. Snead, you need to come in the clubhouse. There's lightning is getting close." And supposedly Snead turned around to him and said, "I ain't afraid of no damn lightning. The only two things I'm afraid of are downhill putts and Ben Hogan."
They had some pretty good battles, Hogan and Snead, over the years, for sure. You know, now, Tom Watson, after Sam Snead's death a few years later, Tom Watson took over that position as professional emeritus. How did Tom Watson, a guy from Kansas City, become so ingrained in the Greenbrier community?
Well, you know, that's an interesting story, and it ties back to our current owner, Mr. Justice. Tom was on the 1979 Ryder Cup team and came here for the practice rounds intending to play in the Ryder Cup. His wife was pregnant at the time and was about to deliver their first child. early in the week before the matches began, she went into labor, and Tom got a phone call and was told that he needed to get back to Kansas City, like, immediately if he wanted to be at the birth of his child. And at that time, there was, you know, travel from here, it's a remote area, was difficult. Mr. Justice, our current Mr. Justice's father, James Justice Sr., had a private airplane, and he volunteered his airplane to fly Tom back to Kansas City. Tom got back in time for the birth of his daughter and did not return, did not play in the Ryder Cup. And that, I think, created a connection for Tom that the Greenbrier was a very special place and that people here cared about others and would do the extraordinary to try to, you know, to try to make sure that, that they were helpful. So he began coming back, and he fell in love with the West Virginia. He fell in love with the Greenbrier, and he began holding an event here that he continues to this day where he brings his sponsors and his management team here and plays 2 days of golf with them, great fellowship, have a couple of meetings perhaps, but mostly it's just a way of saying thank you for being part of Team Watson. And he's been doing that all these years. And then 15 years ago, we began a pro-am that has his name on it, and that's a 2-day pro-am where Tom plays with each of the participants. He signs a lot of autographs. He speaks at, in the evening. And this year was especially good because he, as the Ryder Cup captain, he enthralled the group with some stories about his Ryder Cup captaincy selections and what's going to be happening in a couple weeks over in Scotland. And, you know, the you could have heard a pin drop when he was telling the crowd about, you know, what he thinks is going to happen and how it's going to unfold. So, yeah, Tom is now sort of become identified with the Greenbrier. He's been wearing it on his clothing for so long that, you know, people think of the Greenbrier and Tom Watson the way they used to think of the Greenbrier and Sam Snead.
Yeah, that's pretty good stuff. Hey, the Greenbrier even branched out this year. You built a brand new training facility, and you had one of the NFL's football teams in there for a training camp, I believe.
We did. It's awesome, and who would have ever thought? But, again, this is just an example of how Mr. Justice thinks outside the box and how he's willing to commit resources to make special things happen. He developed a friendship with Sean Payton, who was actually here at the Greenbrier Classic, caddying for Ryan Palmer, a friend of his, the pro, and Mr. Justice and Sean Payton began talking about, you know, Sean fell in love with the area and what a great area it is, and wouldn't it be cool to, you know, bring my team here, but, you know, there's no facilities, and he and Jim sat down, and the next thing you know, we're building three football fields, two grass and one turf, and a 40,000-plus square foot building with locker rooms and training rooms, meeting rooms, and multipurpose areas. And so the Saints came here and spent just under a month, and they'll be back the next 2 years, and they loved it. They loved the opportunity to train here in lower temperatures and lower humidity versus Louisiana when it's, you know, just so hot and humid you can barely stand it. And so the players and coaches were here in the hotel. They were accessible to people. We had huge crowds come out and watch the practices, which were all open to the public. And it's just created a relationship here with the Saints, and the local community kind of adopted them as West Virginia's team.
Well, you know, Bert, it certainly appears that the Greenbrier has seen so much history, but it's forging headfirst into the future and solidifying its reputation as one of the leading resorts in the world. You know, people talk about Pinehurst, they talk about Pebble Beach. You know, the Greenbrier has to be near the top of every golfer's bucket list if they just have not been there yet.
Well, Mr. Kimmick, our president, is fond of saying that we're one of one. And by that he means that there really are no other resorts that offer as wide a range of activities. There are great golf resorts. You mentioned one, Pinehurst, Kohler. There's others. And golf is pretty much, you know, 80% of what you do. There might be some riding or a few other activities. But when you look at what we have here in the wide range of things for the entire family, I'm not just talking about horseback riding and tennis and fitness, but whitewater rafting, falconry, off-road driving, the list just goes on and on. We've got one of the greatest shooting facilities for sporting clays. There's no end to the things, glass-blowing studios and artist colonies and museums, and it's a special place. There's nothing like it. If you haven't been to the Greenbrier, you owe it to yourself to come and experience a 230-year resort that, you know, we're not called America's Resort for nothing.
Yeah, I certainly enjoyed my stay there, and can't wait to get back to come back again and see it and talk with you guys. It was truly great. Well, Bert, again, we want to thank you so much for taking time to talk with us today, and we look forward to when we can get a chance to get back out there again.
Well, it's my pleasure. You're always welcome, and to all your listeners, we're here. We'd love to have you come visit. Just give us a call.
All right, Bert. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, Fred.
That was the interview with Bert Bain, the GM of the Greenbrier Golf. And Fred, definitely the Greenbrier is more than just golf. It's a great hotel there. The north entrance is iconic. Presidents have stayed there. The last one was Dwight Eisenhower. But what about your stay there at the Greenbrier?
Well, you know, the Greenbrier and really all of West Virginia really opened my eyes to what a unique area for golf and really for touring any outdoor activity, kayaking, rafting, fishing, you know, family activities. The whole state is great, but the Greenbrier for sure. It's world class. Mr. Bain said it correctly, and their service is just unparalleled. Everyone takes such good care of you; they treat you like you are a billionaire. I mean, it's really phenomenal. I was just totally blown away with it, Carlos. And I'm sincere in the fact that I just can't wait to get back there. I wanted to go there for over 25, 30 years, and this opportunity came along, and I was so happy to get to go there, and it like I said earlier, it just exceeded every expectation that I had. The Greenbrier course is a beautiful, beautiful golf course. I truly enjoyed playing that. And then the next day we got to play the old white TPC, and, you know, as he mentioned, the CB McDonald, and you just don't get to play those CB McDonald tracks, and it's a wonderful golf course, laid out so beautifully with the mountains all around you there. It's truly a beautiful, beautiful spot, but, you know, we didn't even talk about the bunker there that was kept a secret for so long, you know, where the during the Cold War, the Congress would have been shuttled off to there and put behind steel doors. Actually, they built in right into the mountain so they could keep the Congress safe and it could go about its business there at the hotel. And they actually built a part of the hotel above it to hide it, so no one didn't even know it was there. It's just a unique facility. I was so glad I got to go there, and just can't urge anybody that has the opportunity or is thinking about going. It's you know, it's not the cheapest place in the world to go. If you're on a tight budget, there are other places. Go to Pipestem, go to Glade Springs, you know, and just take a day trip over to the Greenbrier and check it out. But if you can afford it, if it's in your budget, go spend a night or two there. It's well worth it. Do some of the activities. Take in the facilities there. It's a wonderful place. And Mr. Justice has really revived it. You know, I had a chance. I talked to Jim Dotson the other day, and of course, Jim is very familiar with the Greenbrier, growing up down that way and knowing Snead so well. He had said, you know, it really had gone on hard times, and it was really going downhill in the last 20 years or so, and people were very concerned about it. And Mr. Justice, being from West Virginia, a local guy, and really kind of stole it away from some other people, and has injected a bunch of money into it and has restored it to the prominence that it really deserves. It's a wonderful, wonderful facility.
And for all of you to know, the Greenbrier is located just outside the town of White Sulphur Springs in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, and it's a Forbes 4-star and AAA 5-diamond award-winning resort and as well, as you can see, is a U.S. National Register of Historic Places member and a U.S. National Historic Landmark. So that to add to what Fred was saying. So, Fred, any other thing that you would like to add about the Greenbrier before we move on to our practice range?
No, I think I pretty much covered it. And the only other thing, that fall is here, and, you know, everybody wants to go to Vermont or New England to see the colors with the trees changing. Vermont, New Hampshire, they got nothing on West Virginia. Take a drive down through West Virginia. It's beautiful down there, and the trees are going to be turning here in a couple weeks, and it'll be gorgeous in that area. Just Google some pictures of the area in the fall, and you'll see why. Might be and probably will be less costly for you to go down to West Virginia also than going up to Vermont.
There you have it, West Virginia, the Greenbrier, and all the places around in there. Let's take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have our theme of the week. What do you prefer, $10 million by winning the FedEx Cup, or do you prefer winning a major championship? That when we come back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time for theme of the week on the practice range. Like I said, what do you prefer? $10 million, the FedEx Cup win, or do you prefer to win a major championship? Golf, it's an individual sport that it doesn't lend itself to a natural or traditional postseason format. But the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup playoffs, which are now in their eighth year and have settled nicely, to keep our attention after the majors. It's always an enviable for them to compete against the start of the football season. And, of course, Tiger Woods was impressive this year, so that might have hit a little bit of it. But, you know, the tour puts enough money up to draw everyone qualified and keep the best players in the world coming. So it's better, definitely, than the alternative of just playing out of the autumn with a string of non-major, regular, and irrelevant tournaments. This year, the four-week run was bridging us right into the Ryder Cup, so there was more expectation for it. But the dilemma is the FedEx Cup worth all that hype? Obviously, the winner of the Cup gets a truckload of money, $10 million. But is that what the players really want? I am sure that if you ask Brent Snedeker or Henrik Stenson, the last two FedEx Cup winners, if they would trade it for a major championship title, of course they would. Also, you can ask Jim Furyk, the 2010 champion, what was more memorable for him or rewarding for him, the U.S. Open he won in 2003 there at Olympia Fields or the FedEx Cup at the 2010? I'm quite sure that he would say the U.S. Open. A PGA championship win last year would have put Furyk there with 17 career wins in two majors that would have tied him with Curtis Strange's career record and always assuring him a spot in the World Golf Hall of Fame. I'm sure a fat paycheck doesn't outweigh the feeling of winning a major. Do you honestly think that Phil Mickelson, last year's winner of the Open, that his first claret jug, he would trade it for the FedEx Cup? I don't think so. It's weird to imagine that a $10 million prize is more or less a consolation prize for someone who plays well all season and doesn't get a major, Tiger Woods. Obviously, it doesn't pertain to players now, but do you think that there's an aspiring professional golfer right out there, right now on the practice screen, lining up his putt and saying, okay, this one is for the FedEx Cup win? No way.
Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
No, they don't. All young golfers joke around with their friends saying, this one is for the Masters or for the U.S. Open. and in Europe, this one is for the Open. The season-long race depends almost all on the Tour Championship Tour. I can't say that I'm a huge fan of that either, because you're judged at the end of your career by your win total and major championship titles. As prestigious as the FedEx Cup makes itself out to be, it's not the most coveted trophy out there. Yes, I am sure that fans are excited that we get to watch more golf this year, but, and as I and players know, that it's just about money at this point. The FedEx Cup race will never inspire the passion that the majors do. Guys like Bobby Jones, Ben Hogan, Byron Nelson don't have their names etched in that trophy. The FedEx Cup represents the materialism in society, while a U.S. Open trophy, a green jacket, the Claret Jug, and even the Wanamaker trophy represent a pure love for the golf, for the game of golf. I haven't seen yet a player break down in tears, Fred, for a FedEx Cup title, like the weight is of the world was just lifted off their shoulders for a lifetime of hard work and dedication. I want the FedEx Cup, and I'm sure I'm not going to see it for a long time, so it's not the same, Fred. It's not the same.
Carlos, I don't know. I beg to differ a little bit. As a professional golfer, you're trying to win the most amount of money to provide for your family's financial security. And I know Kieran's probably going crazy and just jumping up and down and slamming his radio or whatever he's listening to against the wall right now. But Billy Horschel, just 27 years old, just won over $13 million in 3 weeks. That's going to keep his baby in formula and diapers and plus cover his tuition at Harvard, Yale, or Princeton if he wants to go to it. The amount of money available on the PGA Tour these days is absolutely phenomenal. Just finishing in the top 15 in a place like Bay Hill or the Memorial will put over $100,000 in your bank account. Just finishing top 15. Hogan, Palmer, Nicklaus, and Woods did and do not really worry about the money. I know it's easy for them, but Palmer and Nicklaus did not have huge endorsement deals when they started out. They had to win. Palmer and Nicklaus wanted to be ranked among the Joneses, the Hogans, and the Sneeds of the golf world. Woods entered the PGA Tour with a $40 million Nike contract in his pocket, but that didn't damper his desire to win 14 majors and 77 tournaments. Guys like Nelson, Hogan, and Snead had to win just to make a living in the early days on tour. Anything below a 10th place finish didn't pay enough to make gas money to get out of town. Does too much money in the FedEx Cup ruin a promising career and prevent major wins? Well, you know, Padraig Harrington said in an interview with David Faraday that one of his worst things for a golfer's career is to win a major. Because, number one, a sense of security came over him, and he maybe didn't have the same desire to win another. Or number two, higher expectations now puts too much pressure on the player. He's expected to win more majors to validate the first. I found this statistic to be quite interesting. Since the FedEx Cup started in 2007, only one winner, Tiger Woods, has gone on to win a major championship, the 2008 U.S. Open, and that was his last major win. The FedEx Cup has now been contested for 8 years, and only one FedEx Cup winner has won a major championship after winning the $10 million. Vijay Singh won two majors prior to his FedEx Cup win, the 1998 and the 2004 PGA Championships, plus the 2000 Masters. Jim Furyk won the 2003 U.S. Open, as you mentioned, prior to winning his 2010 FedEx Cup. Neither Singh nor Furyk has won another PGA Tour title since winning the FedEx Cup. Furyk's had some great years and contended in majors, but has not won one. Other FedEx Cup past winners, Bill Haas, 2011, Brant Snedeker, 2012, Henrik Stenson, 2013, and, of course, Billy Horschel this year, have zero major titles among them. Haas did win the 2012 Northern Trust at Riviera and the 2013 AT&T Pebble Beach since his FedEx Cup win. Snedeker, as we know, has struggled with injuries, but did win the AT&T at Pebble and the RBC Canadian in 2013 after winning his FedEx Cup in 2012. Horschel came into this year's FedEx Cup with just a single win at the 2012 Zurich Classic in New Orleans, and time will tell if the financial security that comes with winning the FedEx Cup will prevent him from winning a major. Major championship wins are what get you into the Hall of Fame. FedEx Cup wins are not on the criteria list for induction into the Hall of Fame yet. Wins are why you should be teeing it up every week. But let's be real here, Carlos. This is their job. Some guys like their job more than others who just put in their time and then go fishing or hang out with a family. Gary Player said that Arnold Palmer enjoyed golf much more than he or Jack Nicklaus. Arnold lived for the competition to hit the perfect golf shot to show off for adoring golf fans. For Player and for Nicklaus, it was just their job. But getting back on point here, the financial security and notoriety that goes along with winning the FedEx Cup puts it firmly in the category of winning a major championship in a player's mind. It becomes easier to take a day off of practice, play less events, and the need to win is not as great. Been there, done that mentality. Some players will see the FedEx Cup as their one shining moment of glory. Others look at it as just a step along the road to winning major championships. The majors have the history. That's the difference, Carlos. Jones, Hogan, Snead, Nelson, Palmer, Nicklaus didn't win too many FedEx Cup championships, but they did win a few majors. Current players can't be compared and put themselves in the elite company of the greats of the game unless they win majors and etch their names on the trophies that have been passed down through time. Bottom line here is that winning the FedEx Cup is not the same as winning a major, but for most players, it will suffice.
It will suffice only for the ones that are thinking about that. But like I said, I mean, the format for this competition never crowns a season champion. Never. It might be a coincidence. It might happen, but it never crowns a season-long champion. Like many people would say, or argue, and I know that you have written about this, you can only get hot 1 week and win a major and that's it. No, but that's a major. It's difficult to do it that week. And whoever does it that week has the history. Like you just mentioned, the history behind it. That's what makes it special. FedEx Cup, I'm sure, yes, it's a good consolation prize. I got my 10 millions, yes. But like you just mentioned, BJ Singh, what has he done after that? Brent Snedeker, nothing. Even Henrik Stenson, everybody was waiting for a lot of things. He won both sides of the pond, has done nothing this year. Bill Haas, a miracle win. He has never done anything like that, any other win like that. Jim Furyk hasn't won since he won the 2010 Tour Championship. So definitely it's just the money. Like I mentioned, it's materialism. Yes, it will suffice, but, hey, it doesn't edge your spot in history. None of those winners are right now, let's say, other than Tiger Woods, maybe Vijay Singh, but none of the other winners, well, Jim Furyk, there's still the debate on the Hall of Fame, but none of the others are. And right now, you can consider them even worthy of being there, edging their name in history just because they won the FedEx Cup.
Yeah, Singh is in the Hall of Fame. Furyk's probably going to get in. Furyk has been really close to winning another major, you know, except for a snap hook on 16 at Olympic Club a couple years ago. He would have won that. He could have won that. The U.S. Open there that Webb Simpson won. Furyk has been really close in some other majors and in some other big tournaments along the way. But, you know, Bill Haas, yes, he has not won a major, but you know what? He won at some pretty good places, and he won that playoff over Keegan Bradley and Phil Mickelson at Riviera, which is one of the great golf courses in the world. He also won at Pebble Beach. That's not a bad track. Both of those have hosted U.S. Opens. Snedeker, you know, he's gotten hot. He's won 2-3 events in a row. He's done well, but then injuries have sidetracked him. He probably would have won a major if it wouldn't be for injuries. I know if and buts and nuts and all that good stuff. But, you know, the thing it doesn't have, and I got to go back here to the Players' Championship. You know, the Players is not considered a major. It has the best field in all of golf. And with $10 million, it now has the biggest purse along with the PGA Championship. It's a major. I don't care what you say. It's a major. It just doesn't have the history. The same way now with the FedEx Cup. It also, Carlos, you brought up an interesting point. To win a major, you have to get good for 1 week. Guys like Tiger Woods, Arnold Palmer, Jack Nicklaus, they knew how to get their game right for that 1 week, for those 4 weeks every year with those majors. Other guys have trouble figuring that out. Rory McIlroy seems to be figuring it out. You know, he's probably going to win a few more majors. He's going to win probably a FedEx Cup. But the FedEx Cup also, the guy has to be good for 4 weeks. Yes, you get to carry your stuff in from the year. Dustin Johnson qualified for the Tour Championship without even swinging a club in any of the four tournaments. You know, if you finish in the top 10 or so, you know, you're pretty much assured getting into the Tour Championship, even if you play poorly the first three events. But to win that thing, you've got to top five at least two or three of the tournaments over that four-week period. That's hard to do, Carlos. These are the best fields in golf. You know, you go from 125 to 100 to 70 down to 30. You're playing against the strongest competition out there. That tells me, you know, in the PGA Championship, you've got, you know, 20 club professionals in there, so that waters the field down a little bit. The Masters is only about 90 players. So the field is limited, and you've got a bunch of amateurs that qualify that get in, you know, what, 15 or so of those. So that takes the field down. There's only about 40 guys that you really have to beat in that thing. The U.S. Open and the Open Championship are the two probably most difficult majors to win, without question. The course setup for the U.S. Open is difficult, and the Open Championship, the wide-open criteria to get into that thing and the qualification process, it really gets a lot of players in, and it's difficult for the U.S. players to go over and play a different style of golf. So that's a whole different can of worms, but the FedEx Cup will become a major along with the players. It's going to happen. The money's going to drive it. The prestige of winning it. It's not there yet, Carlos, I know, and we can debate this all day, but it's pretty big stuff. If I'm a player and I'm trying to make money for my family, it's pretty big to me.
I just think that's the point. That, like you mentioned, just two things, because like you said, we can debate all day about this, but just two points. Like you said that about the Masters and the PGA, that there are not as many players that you have to beat. Well, that's what happens here, even though they're not necessarily the best players in the world at that moment, because the field keeps reducing every week, 100, 70, and then 30. So it's not like you're beating all those guys 4 weeks in a row. You do have to play good for 4 weeks, but at the end of the day, if you just win the Tour Championship, you win. Look at Brent Snedeker and look at what happened to Will Haas. A miracle shot there won him over Hunter Mahan. So, you know, it's not like that. It's not that simple. I mean, the legacy that you get in money cannot buy legacies. That's just history, and I'm going to end it with that.
Good deal. Good discussion.
Good deal. Good one. I had the bell here. <It's over. laughs>
I win.
I love the good.
It's a TKO.
Okay, you win. It's okay. Money always wins. You know what they say, you know, the saying says that money heals all wounds, right? That's a quote or something like that. I don't know.
Money talks, the heart grows. Bull crap walks, I believe.
Money makes
my popular
funny, right? I'm sure that Donald Trump would agree with all that.
Exactly.
Hey,
me and Dear Donald, we're on the same page, man.
Yes. He would be revolving right now in Scotland. Anyway, what's up? Our practice range for this week. So tell us. Come on. Tweet to us. Let us know. What's your take? What do you prefer? $10 million to FedEx Cup or winning a major? What's most important for you? Tweet us. Batman Report. Okay, at Batman Report, the number 9 in the middle. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll have our previews for this weekend's action. So don't go away, anybody. We'll be right back.
Thank you for listening. We'll be right back. In the meantime, don't forget to visit www.edraft.com for analysis, breaking news, and more. Also, remember to follow us on Twitter at @edraftsports and on Facebook at facebook.com/edraftsports. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now it's time to start our previews for this weekend's action. We're going to divide this in three sections right now. We're going to talk first about the U.S. Tours for the men. We're going to talk about the Web.com Tour and the Champions Tour. And we're going to start with the Web.com Tour because the Web.com Tour is in the final one, the Tour Championship, okay? The Web.com Tour season is coming to a close with the Tour Championship being played this weekend at the TPC Sawgrass in Ponte Vedra Beach in Florida. That's the sister track to the world-famous The Players Stadium course. Bud Cauley, Adam Hadwin, and Justin Thomas, just like Fred mentioned earlier on, they're not only the three winners of the first three legs of this Tour Finals, they're not only won their cards back for the PGA Tour. They're in their 20s. The youth movement is here. So they are the three winners in the series so far, and the tournament ends the four-event series for the top 75 players from the Web.com Tour money list and the numbers 126 through 200 in the PGA Tour's FedEx Cup standings. The top 25 on the Web.com money list have earned already the PGA Tour cards. They are competing against each other for the PGA Tour priority, with the regular season earnings counting in their totals and the final leader getting a spot in the players' championship. The other players are fighting for another 25 cards based on their earnings in the series. So, Fred, how about the Web.com Tour Championship?
Yeah, as you mentioned, there's the two courses at the TPC Sawgrass, the stadium course that annually hosts the Players' Championship, that has the Island Green at number 17 and all that good stuff. And then there's the Dye Valley course that hosts the Web.com Tour Championship. The Valley course opened in 1987, 7 years after the stadium course. Pete Dye, Bobby Weed, and Jerry Pate all combined to create the Valley course. It's not quite as difficult or as famous as its sister, the stadium course, but it is all a golfer needs in the way of difficulty. Chesson Hadley won the Web.com Tour Championship last season with a minus 10 under par total, but will not defend. He's competing for Rookie of the Year honors this season on the PGA Tour. Players are competing to earn one of the 25 remaining PGA Tour cards for the 2014-2015 season. That will begin at theprize.com next month. Priority ranking, as you mentioned, for the PGA Tour is also a prime consideration for these players. So we want to watch who moves up the board, up into those top five or top 10 places. Carlos Ortiz has led the Web.com Tour top 25 all season, and Adam Hadwin is the number one in the Web.com Tour final series. Golf fans want to watch the movement around the number 50 number as the tournament progresses. 25 cards were issued at the end of the Web.com regular season, and 25 more will be awarded after the conclusion of the Web.com Tour Championship on Sunday. Who's going to play themselves in, and who will fail to qualify for the Web.com Tour next year? You know, we always like to watch Q School, especially those last few groups coming in, to see who could stand the pressure and who would make the putt or who would hit it in the water or choke or whatever. That's exactly what's going to happen on Sunday. Somebody's going to come down, be inside the number, post a double bogey or something on 16, 17, or 18 and play themselves back out and have to play the Web.com again next year. So this is competitive golf at its finest, Carlos. This is what it's all about this week on the Web.com Tour Championship.
The PGA Tour cards, the last 25, are at stake. So be watching. We'll be talking about it next week, about who got earned their cards back. Now let's talk a little bit about the Champions Tour. The Champions Tour is in the Pacific tropical paradise of Kapolei in Hawaii for the Pacific Links Hawaii Championship to be played at the beautiful and windy Kapolei Golf Club. Davis Love III, DL3, he's making his Champions Tour debut. So the 20-time PGA Tour winner turned 50 in April. And you know what? This is a good spot for him to make his debut a winning one. Bernard Langer, the tour leader with 5 victories, is not part of the 81 player field. He is skipping this tournament to play in the European Senior Tour event in Germany, his home country. And Colin Montgomery, the number 2 on this tour, is taking a rest after inflicting a world beating to his rivals on there in the European Senior Tour. So Mr. Hawaii and Mr. Champions Tour, Hale Irwin, his present, he has 8 official Champions Tour victories in Hawaii, winning the Turtle Bay Championship 6 times and the Mitsubishi Electric twice. He also has 3 victories in the Senior Skins and won the PGA Tour's Sony Open. The 69-year-old Irwin leads the 50 and over tour by a mile with 45 career victories. But unfortunately for him, Father Time is not on his side. So there's a lot of other players that with Bernard Langer and Colin Montgomery not here are already striking and smelling win here. So DL3 is one of the favorites definitely, but he is going to have a tough, challenging field of 81 players to beat Fred.
Yeah, as you mentioned, they're in Kapolei Golf Course. It's a par 72, about 7,000 yards. They probably won't play it that much. They're probably going to play about 6,800, something like that. They're only going to play 54 holes, 3 rounds, a $2.2 million purse with $330,000 going to the winner. Golf Channel is going to have the coverage from 1:30 to 4:30 on Friday and Saturday and 2 to 5 on Sunday for the final round. Mark Wiebe is the defending champion. He made an 8-foot birdie at the last year to tie Corey Pavin, and then he won in a playoff. Langer, as you mentioned, with 5 wins and 4 runner-ups, has 600-point lead over 2-time senior major champion Colin Montgomery in the Charles Schwab Cup. But as you mentioned, neither Langer or Montgomery are going to play in Hawaii this week. But they will be in the field next week as the Champions Tour returns to the mainland at Pebble Beach in Monterey, California. So they're getting down to the end of the Champions Tour, just a few events left there. It's going to be Montgomery or Langer for the Charles Schwab Cup. Langer has the edge, but he's still going to have to finish top 10s, top 5, because Montgomery's been playing at such a high level over these last few weeks.
Yeah, he's inflicting a world of pain there in the European Senior Tour. He's playing like a man among youngsters. Hey, let's talk now about the LPGA, the Yokohama Tire LPGA Classic, previously known as the Navistar Star Classic, that will be conducted at the Capitol Hill location on the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail in Prattville, Alabama, a suburb northwest of Montgomery. This will be the 6th edition of this event that was not present on the LPGA schedule last year. Stacey Lewis is technically the defending champion because she won it in 2012, the last time it was held, and she held off that year defending champion Lexi Thompson, who won it the year before at the age of 16, and a youngster. Both are in the field this week, which is a smaller than most regular tournaments with a field of 120 rather than 144. Christy Kerr, Morgan Pressel, Beatriz Ricari, Brittany Lincecum, and Lisette Salas are other of the notables playing this weekend. With only 2 of the world's top 10 ranked players and 27 of the top 100 in this week's field, many players with lower priority will have a chance to make their marks this weekend. Some of them that I'm looking forward to is one of them that I'm looking forward always is the former Alabama star, the very promising Stephanie Neto, was in the field with a sponsor's invitation. She's from Northern Ireland. She was 3rd, as you might remember, in the U.S. Women's Open in June in her professional debut. She's one to be worth watching. Also, you have to watch for the former University of Mexico star player, Jody Iwarchadov, who showed signs of her brilliance in final round of the Evian Championship. And Marina Alex, look out for her. Who is one of those under-the-radar players waiting to make her mark? She was there on the final hole with her good friend Mo Martin when she won the 2014 British Open. Very few would remember that Marina finished T9 that week. So, Fred, this is the LPGA's 2nd stop in Alabama this year. Earlier this year, Jessica Korda won in Mobile, Alabama, at the Airbus LPGA Classic.
Yeah, you know, I've had a chance to I've been here twice, Carlos, to this facility at Prattville. It's one of the Robert Trent Jones Golf Trail facilities. There's actually three golf courses here, 54 holes, and they are all just wonderful. And this is the Capitol Hill Golf Club. The center of the course is just, it's tough. It is really a tough golf course. Lewis, defending champion, she held off Lexi Thompson last year. You've got, as you mentioned, Stephanie Meadows going to be in the field. Brooke Pancake, Jennifer Kirby, and Stephanie Meadows have all had success playing together in Alabama. They clinched the 2012 NCAA National Championships for the University of Alabama women's golf program. So they're going to enjoy a little home cooking this week. This is going to be the final domestic event before a six-week swing in Asia, with the tour not returning to North America for the until the Lorena Ochoa Invitational, and then before the season-ending CME Tour Championship in November. So they've all got their bags packed and their passports in hand, and going to enjoy playing in Alabama before they're off to see the world. Most of the stuff, you know, we've got Stacey Lewis leading the money list. That's gotten a little bit tighter of late. She's still number one in the world. She has not been playing quite up to her standard lately. It appeared to me like she's just maybe a little bit tired or pressing too much. I'm not sure what. Maybe the pressure is getting to her a little bit. She needs to relax and kind of let things happen for her. This is a golf course she's won on. She has good memories here. I look forward to doing real well this year, this week, and a win could maybe ice the Player of the Year and the money list for her, and possibly even the race to CME Globe, that $1 million bonus there. Coverage will be on the Golf Channel for all four rounds. They will be 4 p.m. to 5 p.m. On all 4 days, Thursday through Sunday. So watch for that. And the LPGA, it's always a great show. We always love it, Carlos.
Headlined by Stacey Lewis and Lexi Thompson, who has a second and a win there. So look out for her. Let's move on now to the Ladies European Tour. Seven tournaments remain on that schedule, and this week they head to Spain for the Tenerife Open de España Femenino, which in English would be the Ladies Spain Open in Tenerife, to be played at the Golf Costa Adeje in Tenerife in Spain. Defending champion Leon Pace, who is seventh on the order of merit, is back to defend her title. Charlie Hall, who is third in the order of merit, will be the highest-ranked player on the 126-player field. She'll be joined by fellow top 10 players in the order of merit, Gladys Nocera, Linky Campbell, and Kylie Walker. Veteran Trish Jensen, who won this earlier this year, is also on the field. The home players will be headlined by Europe Solheim top team member Carlota Siganda, Imagra Cabrera-Bello, she's the sister of European Tour star Rafa Cabrera-Bello, and keeping on the youth movement, you have to look out for the recent European Ladies Amateur Championship winner, Luna Sobron. That's a name you might want to keep in mind for the future. She's a rising star there from Spain.
Yeah, you've got Leanne Pace, who we talked to up at the Meyer Classic, is a defending champion here. And in the Ladies European Order of Merit, you've got Suzanne Pedersen now is the leader, and she's only played in three events on the Ladies European Tour this year. Shan-Chan Fang's only played in two events, and she's now number two. So Charlie Hall has dropped down to number three. Gladys Nocera, Nikki Campbell, Valentin Duray, and Lee Ann Pace is number seven. Only played seven events. She spent most of her time playing in the U.S. Laura Davies, 50-some-year-old Laura Davies, still at number eight. So they've still got six events remaining on their schedule. They're playing about two events every month through October, November, December. So they're getting down also to who's going to win the Order of Merit and who's going to win these last few events.
Yeah, very good tournament to watch. Let's move on now to the European Tour. The European Tour returns to the UK this week for the ISPS Handa Wales Open, presented by the Celtic Manor Resort. As always, a strong field will contest the event over the 2010 course at the Celtic Manor, a layout that hosted the Ryder Cup 4 years ago. Fittingly, four players who are taking part in this year's contest, which takes place next week at Glen Eagles, are in the field. Wildcard picks Lee Westwood and Stephen Gallagher will be joined by automatic qualifiers Thomas Bjorn and home favorite Jamie Donaldson as they bid to sharpen their games ahead of the Ryder Cup. The likes of Paul Casey, winner of last week's KLM Open, Ross Fisher, and the Molinari brothers are also teaming it up in Wales. The ISPS Handa Wales Open started life as the Celtic Manor Resort Wales Open in 2000 and has produced a strong list of winners since its inception, including European Ryder Cup captain Paul McKinley, Paul Laurie, Ian Poulter, golf's most interesting man, Miguel Ángel Jiménez, and GMAC, Graham McDowell, Fred.
Yeah, you've got 1.8 million euros total purse. You mentioned it's at Celtic Manor, and I have bad memories of that. I think the U.S. lost a Ryder Cup there a few years ago. I seem to remember Hunter Mahan dubbing a chip shot and Graham McDowell making putts from off the earth there, as I recall. You got the big names there are Jamie Donaldson, Thomas Bjorn, Stephen Gallagher, and Lee Westwood. Lee Westwood, is he a Ryder Cupper, I believe? This is a Lee Westwood sighting, one of the few this year. These guys are getting in a few holes of golf before the Ryder Cup next week when they will move over to Glen Eagles. So Westwood, I don't know, maybe he can resurrect his season, get a win, and roll into the Ryder Cup on a solid note. Greg Bordy is the defending champion. He won his fourth title here last year. So, that's about all I have, I guess, on the tournament in Wales this week. I'm just looking forward to the Ryder Cup.
Yeah, Lee Westwood, yes, he's on the team, and he's thrilled. He said to be playing here after securing the Ryder Cup wild card pick, and that should translate to good showing at a course that he knows well. Also look out for Spaceman, Andy Sullivan. I can't stop saying this after he won that space trip with a hole-in-one there at the KLM Open. So Spaceman, Andy Sullivan, let's see if he keeps doing those hole-in-ones. Hey, there's more action on the European soil. The European Senior Tour will return to the Winston Open course in Forbach in Germany for the third edition of the Winston Golf Senior Open starting on Friday. Scotland's Gordon Brent Jr. claimed the title last year, succeeding Australian Terry Price, who won the inaugural event in 2012. This is another strong field that will be present for the tournament's third edition, with the players competing for a prize fund of €400,000. The field is headlined by Bernhard Langer, the Champions Tour leader, who will return to the European Senior Tour for the first time since his stunning victory in the Senior Open Championship presented by Rolex, when he makes his only second appearance in his home tournament, looking for it to be a happy homecoming for him. Colin Montgomery won't be present, but Langer would have plenty of top players looking to deny him, like last year's tour winner Paul Westling, the past weekend's winner Team Fountain. Rick Gibson, who's third in the order of merit, Cesar Monasterio leading the Rookie of the Year race, Miguel Angel Martin, Steve Tinning, Andrew Alcorn, and many more. So counting this one, the European Tour, Senior Tour has four tournaments remaining in the schedule. It's getting to a nitty-gritty there before the championship. And finally, the Challenge Tour is heading to the city of Almaty in Kazakhstan for the 10th edition of the Kazakhstan Open, the Challenge Tour's most lucrative event, with a total purse of €450,000 and the winner taking home to €72,000. Since the inaugural event in 2005, the tournament has been played at two different courses based outside Almaty in the country's southeastern corner, Nortau Golf Course and Sejari Golf Resort, which is the host venue this week. Five more tournaments to go after this one, so it's getting very close to crunch time to crack the ever-important top 15 on that tour. Andrew Johnson, Benjamin A. Bird, and Jake Roos will be looking to earn the automatic promotion to the European Tour as they seek their third win this year, but they will have a tough field to do it, as early tour leader Jordi Garcia Pinto, Bai Yong An, Oliver Farr, Michael Lorenzo Vega, and Mark Tulo are the other players in the top 10 that will try to detain them, along with the rest of the very capable field there at the Challenge Tour, the Kazakhstan Open. So the other tournaments action and the regional tours, we have the U.S. Golf Association has the U.S. Senior Amateur running through Thursday at the Big Canyon Country Club in Newport Beach, California. The men's also in the Japan Golf Tour has the ANA Open. It's going to be played at the Sapporo Golf Club in the Watsu course in Hokkaido in Japan. And the Asian Tour has the Selangor Masters. It's played at the Seri Selangor Golf Club in Petaling Jaya in Malaysia. The women has the U.S. Golf Association, has the U.S. Senior Women's Amateur that's going to be played at the Hollywood Golf Club in Deal in New Jersey. The Japan LPGA Tour has the Massinger Ladies Tokai Classic that's going to be played at the Aichi Country Club in South Course in Aichi, Japan. And I would like to mention also that the Symetra Tour will complete its 2014 schedule this week with the playing of the Symetra Tour Championship. It starts on Thursday, September 18th, concludes on Sunday. And the answer is simple. Why about this? All LPGA fans should be paying close attention to this week's Symetra Tour resorts. The Symetra Tour, who is also known as the Road to the LPGA, will be handing out 10 LPGA Tour cards to the top 10 money winners at the completion of play. Those 10 players will get tour status for next season. They will be issued a Category 9 playing card, meaning they will be listed immediately after the top 80 LPGA players on the 2015 LPGA priority list. These players will be able to compete in a full field event in 2015. There are currently 39 players that have 39 that have a chance to obtain a card this week. If Ashley Tate, who is currently 39 on the Symetra Tour money list, was to win this week, she would then have more money than the player currently sitting at 10, so she could make it. Now, five players are currently safe and will receive their card no matter what. That's Marisa Steen, Mingxia Kwak, Serena Parks, Min Li, Wei Lung Su, and Cindy Feng. The rest are playing for all those positions, so four more are up for grabs. So the Symetra Tour Championship is this weekend. So, Fred, that wraps up our previews for this weekend's action. We're going to take one more short break. When we come back, we have an open field here to talk about a lot of things, but they're already there on the table. So don't go away. We will be right back.
Thank you for listening to the Back 9 Report presented by eDraft.com. We'll be right back. Don't forget to check out our co-hosts on Twitter by clicking their names in the episode description. Now, back to the show.
And we're back, and now we are on our free time now to talk about open subjects. And Fred, I know that you have something to talk about. Let's start, if you want, with the PGA Tour announcing the nominees for Player of the Year.
Yeah, before we get to that, Carlos, I want to alert the golfaholics out there. I don't know if you caught it, but the Arnie's 85th birthday was last week, and on September the 10th, and the Golf Channel and NBC did this great video set to Walter D. Wintner's poem, Thinking. And I don't know if many people caught that. If you can somehow find it on one of the Golf Channel shows, or they played it, I know, during the if you had the tournament DVR last week, they played it during when they came in and out of some of the breaks, I know. Really a wonderful tribute to Arnold using that poem. He actually has that poem framed and on his wall behind his desk. in his office in Latrobe. I found that really intriguing. I've tried to find the video on YouTube or on the Golf Channel website. I can't seem to find it anywhere, but if somebody can find it, send me a link or something. I'd love to look at it from time to time. It's really, really well done. But yes, Player of the Year and Rookie of the Year nominations are out. I don't think there's much drama here, but real briefly, for Player of the Year, you've got Billy Horschel, of course, just winning the FedEx Cup, 27 events, two victories there at the end of the year, finished seventh on the official money list, had five top 10 finishes. Martin Kaymer, of course, with the Players and the U.S. Open wins, finished 10th on the official money list. You've got Jimmy Walker, won three times earlier in the year, ended up fourth on the money list. And then you've got old Bubba. All Bubba did this year was win the Northern Trust, he won that little tournament up there at Augusta, the Masters for the second time. So he had a pretty good year again. And I think I'm missing somebody. There's this kid from Ireland, this McIlroy kid. He had a pretty decent year. I don't think he finished below 25 in any tournament this year. Made every cut. I don't know what, like 12 top 10 finishes. 12, Carlos. Three wins. Oh, three of the wins, by the way, Carlos, included, I believe, an Open Championship and a PGA. So two majors. And in between there, he just casually won the WGC Bridgestone, too. So, he didn't do too bad. I think he finished, third or fourth in the FedEx Cup, too. Had a chance to win the whole thing coming down the end. So I think Mr. McIlroy is probably going to win the Player of the Year honor. I'm not too sure about that, but if I were a betting person, which I don't bet, I would pretty much bet on Rory for that deal. You've got Rookie of the Year nominations, Victor Dubuisson, Chesson Hadley, and Brooks Koepka. Koepka started the year without any status on the PGA Tour, entered 16 events, had two top finishes, earned a special temporary membership, and earned his card for next year. He will be full-time on the PGA Tour. Chesson Hadley came off the Web.com Tour last year. He's in the running here for the Player of the Year. He finished 58 on the official money list, had four top 10 finishes, 29 events. I think, I don't know, it's going to be a toss-up. Victor Dubuisson had a nice year. You know, he finished runner-up in the WGC Accenture Match Play to Jason Day. He's going to get his membership for next year for sure, earn a total of $1.7 million. I don't know. He had a nice week at the Accenture. He had a good season. For the whole of the season, though, I'd pick Chesson Hadley, but who knows? That one's up in the air a little bit. Not sure on that one, but I'd say McIlroy's got the Player of the Year thing wrapped up.
I think he wrapped it up when he left Caroline Wozniacki. That's when he just won it. Right there.
Ouch! Ouch!
Did I say that? Oh, my God, he's already in record. Oh, no, what did I do?
Ouch!
No,
you'll be getting a call from our lawyer tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm going to apologize right now.
That's Torres with a T, T-O-R-R-E-S.
I have to agree. He really definitely has, hands down, won this Player of the Year. And Rookie of the Year, it's a toss-up. I mean, three very discerning players, I would say. Victor Dubuisson got hot earlier, but like you said, I think that Chesson Hadley had maybe the better overall year because Brooks didn't start as good. He did play well right down the middle and ended up nicely. But I think that Chesson Hadley, winner there at the Web.com Tour last year, he might have had the best all-around year. So if I were giving the prize, I would give it to him. So definitely Chesson Hadley to me would be the Rookie of the Year and the winner up here, the Puerto Rico Open. Yes, Chesson, go for it. He has my phone. That's my word.
So we're also going to come down to the end of the year. We're also coming down to the end of the year here on the European Tour. The race to Dubai has become important. You've got just a few events left, and they're getting into the real meat of their season. All the big guys will be going over the play now after the Ryder Cup here next week. So you got Rory currently leading the race to Dubai. You got Sergio second, Jamie Donaldson third, Bjornstrom hanging in there fourth, and Henrik Stenson in fifth. So I know Rory's probably a little disappointed he didn't get the 10 mil, and he wanted that FedEx Cup to go with the race to Dubai. Gee, it's not a major, Carlos, but these guys want to win it. You know, they make it. You know, Luke Donald won a few years ago in money list on both tours, and of course he didn't win the FedEx Cup, but he was close. If Bill Haas wouldn't have threw in that unbelievable shot from the water, and then you got Rory won them both. And then you got Stenson, who won the FedEx Cup. It's not a major, but, you know, these guys are trying to win it. And so the race to Dubai is the same thing, just not quite as big of dollars, but really big bonuses, season-long pools that are going to be paid out, bonus pools, along with the prize money for the tournament. So European Tour, a lot of good golf coming on the European Tour between now and December.
It's not a major. It won't be a major, Fred. Won't be. You already passed that. You won. People just should start practicing. I mean, it's all about
practice. Talking about practice. Not a game. We're talking about practice. Practice, man. I mean, how silly is that?
No, it's not silly.
Hey, you know what, Carlos, and I do disagree with you also going back to that. You know, kids are going to be out there on the putting greens going, and this is for the $10 million FedEx Cup. They're going to be doing that, I'm telling you.
No, I don't teach that. I said that's for the U.S. Open or the Masters, and I'm sure Kieran is showing them there for the Open. It's for the Open. Hey, any other subjects that you would like to talk about before we close the show?
No, I think I've pretty much covered everything that I wanted to talk about tonight. I thought we had a really great show, and I hope everybody enjoyed it. Love to hear about what they think about Major versus FedEx Cup. Either via Twitter or Facebook. Find us on Facebook or Twitter or wherever, and let us know what you think. I'd love to hear from people and get some comments, maybe get a little discussion going.
Yeah, like we said, our Twitter ID is Back9Report, and it's the number 9, not the letters, number 9, Back9Report. So tweet to us. Let us know your thoughts. Is it Fred Wright? Will they be talking about this one is for the FedEx Cup, $10 million, or will it be like I am saying, no, this is for the Masters, this is for the U.S. Open? Let us know your thoughts on it. So, Backman Report, friends, that wraps up another week of the Backman Report presented by eDraft.com. It's a pleasure to bring you the latest on the world of golf. Special thanks to our VIG, very important guest of the week, Bert Bain, the GM of the Greenbrier. Great interview, great insight there from that landmark, the Greenbrier in West Virginia. Don't forget to join us again next Tuesday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time on Block Talk Radio, and now also through TuneIn. If you haven't done so, follow the show. Like I said, the Twitter ID is at Back9Report, the number 9 in the middle, Back9Report. My name is Carlos Torres, along with Fred Alvader. Be happy, be blessed, and enjoy the great game of golf. Happy golfing, everybody.
Good night, everybody.